it bugs the fuck out of me how much the anime channel on Idle Thumbs is like, best anime of the season.
That's definitely going in the pre-roll, right? Half of our listenership is in that in that channel.
Hello and welcome to Keyframes, a podcast about anime. I'm your host, Ben Halliburton, and with me today is Duncan.
Hey.
And Jeff.
Yellow.
It's a threefer this time, the first in like a long time. So we get to be extra agile. We get to innovate at an extremely rapid rate. And the way that we're going to innovate is by talking about workplace nerd love comedy Wotakoi first. Or I forget what the full like... Love is hard for otaku.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wotaku ni koi wa mizukashi. Which, yeah, I think all of us are watching, although Jeff, you're a little bit behind.
Yeah.
Duncan, how have you been enjoying this this show that you were originally, if I remember, concerned that it wouldn't be like full adult relationships?
It still isn't. It still irks me that the only anime this season where anyone has fucked is Frank's.
I mean, not surprised, because that again is a giant robot show where they pantomime sex as a way of piloting robots. But I think like there is the underwear thing where she's worried that she's wearing the wrong kind of underwear.
Yeah,
I don't know. They may have had sex. We don't know. It's not our business.
Well, if they're going to make a show about relationships, then surely whether or not they are is part of that in establishing their intimacy. But, yeah.
The other couple is definitely off screen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they're getting busy all the time. They've been dating since like, high school?
Yeah.
I'll bet they're not. That's the thing. Like, I bet they started that way, but now they're probably like in that stage where you're like, you've been together for a long time. I don't know if you guys have been in relationships that have lasted that long.
How long are you like since high school? No, I haven't been dating someone since high school.
For like 6-7 years plus.
No, I've only my longest relationship was, I guess, 3 years long. And a lot of that was long distance. So like I got the basic effect of like, oh yeah, we don't have sex all the time anymore. It's like, no, 6 or 7 years. Or I mean they're in their mid-20s probably, because they keep talking about how the deep voiced serious dude, what's his name, Kabakura, is older than Hirotaka, who is the main girl, Narumi. She's her boyfriend. And yeah, so he's older than her. And Kabakura is older than Hirotaka, so like he must be in like his mid-20s, late-20s.
I think they're all like 26 to 29-ish.
So more than 6 or 7 years, that's like a decade.
Yeah.
Woof.
It's weird that sort of to have characters portrayed as, oh, this is the older one in the group, the senior one, and I'm thinking they're still younger than me.
Yeah, by a good margin.
I mean, the thing is, I'm just so pathetically gratified to have people who aren't in like high school or college. I mean, even college, I'm just like half of what got me through Golden Time was just like they're in college and they're living alone and they don't have parents or childhood friends. Although, yeah, but it's like, no. I mean, I'm just pathetically thankful that we have like 20-year-olds who like work jobs and have to get up early in the morning and that sort of thing.
And get drunk fairly often.
Yeah it's kind of like Eurocamp, where every now and then it will become sort of an informational about like, this is how you can be a nerd and have a social life. You know, if you invite people over to your house, hide your porn, clean up.
They did have the hiding porn thing where they and then like, oh, it's the typical thing, like, oh, he likes big boobs.
Well, he did, yeah, and he also like they mentioned like, you know, oh, like you can often tell how people are by the smell of their apartment and things like that. Like things that you might not necessarily be aware of when you're inviting people over for the first time.
Just to quickly recap, Wotakoi, Love is Hard for Nerds, or whatever it's called, is a workplace comedy where a girl who has had her last three serious relationships get torpedoed when the guy discovers that she like watches anime and plays video games, which is wild for me, but sure. Ends up meeting a childhood friend at her new workplace that she switched jobs specifically to get away from that reputation, and they start dating, and then they meet their like senpais in the corporate hierarchy. They become friends with them, and they're also kind of secretly dating and also huge nerds. And yeah, it's based on a Pixiv comic that got bought by a manga publisher, now is like a real manga, but so it started as like a web comic basically. And yeah, I don't know, I think it's really interesting. When I first talked about it, I talked about how like I didn't really like the art and the vocal performances were underwhelming, and I've warmed the vocal performances. I still think the art's kind of not great, except for Hanako, who it just I like the Mimi cuts and glasses and
every now and then they'll throw in a flourish that like they obviously don't have a huge animation budget, but like they do a lot with what little they have. Like I'm struggling to think of a particular example, but every now and then, like when something goes wild, like they'll just do like a or like I really like the visual references to other shows and other anime and things like that.
Yeah, I mean that's the cool thing is that they have, because they're part of like a big licensing collective, that they're able to pull in like Monster Hunter, and Saikano is advertised repeatedly in the show as like something, as an anime that's airing right now, and they often like, it's just nice not to have to deal with the anime and video game equivalent of like WickDonald's,
yeah,
or Soapy instead of Sony or something like that.
And also I will give them credit for being like one of the only shows I've ever seen where like the while people are playing video games, they act like people playing video games.
Yeah.
Like they do some of the tropes of like, you know, like they, you know, they make it specifically like a desire reference joke or the desire detector.
Yeah.
Joke with Monster Hunter and things like that. Like, you know, like that's the one, you know, thing that lots of people know about Monster Hunter, but it reads as authentic and it feels real, and it's nice.
And Duncan is just not working for Duncan. You seem so...
No, I like it. it's... I think it's very low-key.
Mm-hmm.
It's just...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, one that my pet likes in anything is that if I feel like it mimics the sort of cadence of the thing it's trying to portray. And I think this does a good job because... In that it feels like it has a pace which fits with a low-key relationship. It's not like, doesn't have big drama all of the time, because most relationships aren't big drama all of the time. They're mostly about learning just how to interact with someone in lots of little ways, and
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it's sort of sweet. I like it. It's probably the thing which I'm happiest to watch each week, but I'm not sure there's much substance to it or it says anything.
Yeah, I mean, that's my thing is like, and this actually links up with something that we'll be talking about subsequently in another show, but like I never prioritize it, but then I always have a fine time watching it, which is nice after last season with all of its heavy hitters and like exhausting emotional stuff of just like, yeah. There is like the episode where Koyanagi, Hanako Koyanagi and Taro Kabakura, the two older employees, have like a really brutal fight about how like he never like shows her that he loves her in the ways that she wants him to, and that was possibly like the biggest drama of the show thus far, but also like real, and also I was really gratified because it was near the end of the episode. I'm like, oh God, is this going to be like a two-part arc of them having this big fight and not talking, and then something will resolve? But like, no, they resolve it themselves because they've been dating for, again, like a decade. And they, like, you have these like mechanisms, and relationships are usually inherently self-stabilizing after a certain number of months and years.
Mm-hmm.
Which is nice because like one of the interesting things is how Kabakura keeps talking about how like Narumi's more his type, and I don't know if that's supposed to make me be suspicious of Kamakura, because, like, if I had a guy friend and he kept talking about how my girlfriend was, like, more his type than the girl he's dating and has been dating for literally his entire adult life, I would be like, what's up with you? But it does kind of make him, like, his big thing is manga, and I think he's, like, more invested in, like, types and archetypes and pairings. Although the big pairing episode was this last one where the two girls went out to a restaurant and got in a big argument about which of their boyfriends would be the top and the bottom in the yaoi pairing, and that was I'm glad that I know from Sunrise Expo Sensei how, like, how important it is, like, who's on what side of the X as the Sime versus the Uke. But yeah, I think it's a web comic written by, I think, a woman.
Yep.
And published in a Jose demographic trade, so, like, Jose is, like, adult woman comic, so, like, I think that it just can be chill in a way that a lot of anime just can't be chill, because it's a much more crowded space with a lot more action and drama.
It had this nice little moment in one of the episodes where she was, like, crying for like a good 5-10 minutes in the thing, and he was like, what's wrong? I can't find out what's wrong, she won't tell me. And then it turns out that one of her favorite characters in her anime series has died. Yeah. It's just like, sometimes it's just nothing, not everything is a drama.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that actually, like, the first few episodes do focus on how, like, Hirotaka, Narumi's boyfriend, who's very, like, cold and aloof and low energy to a degree that would make even Jeb Bush shrink back, but he realizes that he doesn't really know Narumi that well, even though they grew up together, and they kind of have to, like, learn each other's signals. And Narumi is, like, freaked out about talking with Hirotaka because she isn't used to being in a relationship where she doesn't have to hide her true self. And so, yeah, the accommodations and just, like, trying to figure out, like, why someone is laughing or crying or excited or angry, like, I don't know. I feel like it's very honest in that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's no boning, but it's the Noi Tamina, like, the animation backwards slot, it's not gonna be racy. But,
well, there is a kiss.
Yeah, I was gonna say, at least she did grab him by the tie and yank him down.
Mm. Yeah. Cool. Well, when I was alluding to the other anime that I don't really prioritize, but I kind of just, whenever I watch it, I end up having a good time, is Golden Kamuy, which we haven't talked about for a couple of episodes.
Mm.
This is, again, the, like, early 20th century, well, turn of the 20th century, far north of Japan, gold hunting / cooking, like, drama, adventure, action epic. And yeah, it's been good. The wolves are still poorly animated, but the drama is very real.
It's very strange that the wolves are terribly animated, but the dogs aren't.
Yeah, the dogs aren't, and I've gotten used to the bears. I like the bears now.
Wait, so are the wolves CG or are the...
Everything's CG.
Okay.
But the original, to relitigate the thing we talked about last time we talked about Golden Kamuy.
Yeah.
He deliberately CG'd the bears, like, realistically, like, a photorealism to make them look, like, strange and scary, but the dogs and the wolves are much more, like, cartoony, something that you would see in, like, a recent gen cel shaded video game.
Oh, okay.
Or something. And but for some reason the dogs move very smoothly and naturally. They have, like, the Inu, like, Chibi Inu sort of dogs. And but there's two wolves, and they both have, like, a weird, like, lag and over smoothness to their movement that makes them just look super fake. And it makes me literally put my hands over my eyes, like, my fingers over my eyes when I'm watching.
Mm-hmm. I think it's partly that it's easier to do short hair than long hair, and wolves are more shaggy hair than a short hair demon.
Well, I think, and this is to go back to something that I learned in Shirobako, but I think that there's, like, a lot of what makes animated movement a lot more convincing is that you have, like, the movement, and then, like, kind of, it's like, it's, if you move in bursts and pulses. And I think that the wolf movement, as I've began to watch it more closely, was very smooth and continuous, which makes it look like bad animation. Like, 'cause, you know, things don't, you know, when you reach for something, you think about it and then you reach real quick and then you get it and then you take it back. You don't calmly reach it and pull it back unless you're doing a bit. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, in to go back to Wodokoi, I've noticed that a lot of the background animation is filled with people sort of like going through very basic walk cycles that, again, look very smooth, and it's like, you know, whatever house they have that they've outsourced like the background animation to just like didn't have the time or the resources or the talent to clean it up.
Yeah, I guess all of A1's money is going to Frank's or something, because it's not really on display in Wodokoi.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. So to talk about the wolves and animals, I think, is to like distract from what's really good about Golden Kamuy, which is that the setting is interesting and fresh, because I don't think many people, myself included, know terribly much about immediately post Russo-Japanese War and like the kind of final last gasps of pre-modern Japan. And also the characters are really engaging. Immortal Sugimoto is like a really enjoyable character who's not like a blockhead or an asshole or an unbeatable shonen protagonist. And Asirpa is funny, even though I think the poop joke's overdone. But they like to use her small size and like relative seriousness for comedy. And I've gotten into the escape artist guy who has gotten most of the big laughs out of me, because one of the criminals who has the map to the gold tattooed on his back, the expectation is that the guy who hid the gold, people would hunt them down and cut up the skins and use that as a giant map to find the gold. But he's been really funny with like all of his like, when he broke into the storeroom where Immortal Sugimoto was being kept by the rogue military unit, and he was just covered in like pig fat and his like shoulders were both dislocated. And so he just had kind of a weird shrug, and he's like, "Hey, how you doing?" I don't know. There's a lot of physical comedy that I'm surprised they're able to pull off, because this is not the most beautiful anime, mostly by dint of its CG animation. So I don't know. What are you guys liking about it? Or at least Duncan, I know, is watching it.
I think just generally has that good central squad's not quite the right word, party. It's central group of people making their way together, and they've got, as you say, they've got the central pairing, which have good chemistry. And the one slightly weird thing is they do seem to be slightly hinting towards romantic things, which is like this distinct age difference in those two.
Is there, though?
Or is she just tiny?
I think she might just be tiny. I think she's like 15 or 16. He's like, I mean, he was just conscripted into the military, so he must be like 18 or 19. Not great, but also not ridiculous, especially not in 1907. So
it was a different time.
Something we end up saying a lot about historical dramas. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't really have that much to say, but I feel like we weren't talking about it last episode or so, and I've just been enjoying it, and I enjoy the drama, and I'm really dismayed that they only have 12 episodes of this and they don't seem to be headed towards any like sure conclusion. I mean, they've just had what's his face, the former leader of the Shinsengumi, who'd been in jail for 40 years and thought dead, like he's just been like they've just had cuts to him of like doing stuff and preparing for a confrontation while our protagonists fight with a guy who wants to kill the last Hokkaido wolf and stuff. And like, I assume he's just going to rear up in the last arc of the anime, but it just seems ridiculous that they only have 12 episodes of this incredible story planned. I guess we're going to probably hear about a sequel series.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it is almost based on the presumption that it's going to get another series, even if it doesn't, which makes sense. Because with a story which is as long as this one seems to be and as complicated, I mean, like, if this was a live action, what would it be? Almost like a thriller, I guess, where the...
Yeah, I mean, it would, I feel like it'd be like almost a historical epic, like something that, you know, would air over the next 3 years on Masterpiece Theater or something.
Or it would be City Slickers too.
I think the whole, this group of criminals who each have a bit of a map tattooed on them is quite mystery-y.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Prison Break.
And this is something that if John were here, he'd be throwing the smackdown on me for probably, but I feel like the fact that all of these criminals in this like really high security prison have tattoos in the back is a mechanism for just introducing like wacky, almost like One Piece-esque rogues gallery of weirdos with superpowers. Although so far we have like the guy who had the front of his head blown off, which is, he's not even a criminal, but like we have a bunch of people who just have like weird deformities that make them into superhumans. I don't know. I like how it phrased at the edge of the reality there, but I think it's just mostly a storytelling mechanism.
Whoever wrote it definitely watched or read Rurouni Kenshin when they were younger, I feel like.
Mm. Yeah.
I think it's probably like 99% of people in Japan.
Right? Yes, 99%. It's required reading in school, actually.
Yeah. It's one of the it's in the canon.
Yeah. I mean, in a weird way, what I've remembered this series most for is that it's been the better version of Food Wars. Food Wars has had an off season and not really had that many good episodes.
Yeah, their march through largely Ainu, but some northern Japanese cuisine has been. I don't get hungry because I don't think that's typically how I respond to food anime. But it is just nice to see like, oh, like deer meat hot pot, and yeah,
it's more about the way people eat food rather than the food itself.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm vegetarian, so it's obviously got nothing for me in terms of making me want to eat the food, but it's more like just, it reminds me almost like a barbecue or a pub. In the pub, it's about the atmosphere you're eating the food in as much as the food itself.
Well, yeah, because oftentimes what happens is Asirpa, the native Ainu girl, says like, oh, get that, and then she's like, okay, we make this from this, and then Immortal Sugimoto eats it and says, oh, this is amazing, and then he adds miso to it and it's even better. And then we get the poop joke because Asirpa thinks that miso powder is poop. Although he got her to, I liked in the latest episode where she's like, because he had her, they got drunk and he got her to try it and she loved it because miso is pretty delicious.
So is the joke there that miso and kuso sound
no similar? She just thinks it looks like poop because she just thinks it, she calls it osama, which is poop, and she just thinks it's poop, and she thinks it's like a weird Japanese thing where you add a little bit of feces to your meal for spice. But they got drunk, which is also makes me think that she can't be that young because she got really drunk, and this is a show that airs on TV where there are like decency standards. But they got drunk and got her to try it. And then the next time they ate, she's like, uh-oh, Sugimoto, don't be a weird Japanese guy and put any osama in the food. That would be really upsetting. I'd be really like, you always do that and I never stop you. And I don't like, it's really gross, but like, what would happen if you put it in there? I would be really upset. And he's like, I'm going to put some miso in this. And she's like, oh, you did it again. Dang it. Well, I got to eat it because it's got poop. I mean, I got it. It was like, sure, their relationship is really good. I mean, I think it goes back to my typical obsession about how like they're both experts in their respective fields and they kind of have an additive relationship because of that. But yeah, they have good chemistry. And like the fact that she knows how to cook stuff and Sugimoto seems to mostly know how to eat stuff and add miso to stuff is just like a good dynamic. And the fact that they, right after I was like, I'm getting tired of her saying, I'm not going to eat that because you put poop in it. He got her to try it. Now, like, she's got like a weird kind of masochist relationship with him adding miso to everything. I don't know. It's a good show. I'm enjoying it a lot. And like I said, I'd be sad if it was only 12 episodes. And if they're going to just keep forging ahead with the assumption that either they get renewed or they don't, sure, it's better than an adventure that continues ending, or let alone a... Mm-hmm. let alone an anime original ending that just stops it right there. So shrug.
It doesn't feel like it's going that way.
I don't know how they would. Like they have what, 5 episodes left?
Mm.
Yeah. Speaking of, I don't know, violence. to combine, basically, to put the best parts of Wotokoi and Golden Kamuy in a blender is to get something that probably looks passingly similar to Sword Art Online, Alternative, Gun Gale Online. I don't think I have much to say about this, except to say that it's nice that both me and Duncan are probably right in our readings of where the series is going. That Pitohui's stupid death game is a real thing. And also, like, yeah, I started paying attention to how, like, when they bring up the pop star lady, and yeah. And the fact that, like, that M, we met M in real life, and he's, like, a handsome, muscular guy with lots of money. I don't know. I'm enjoying it still.
Yeah. I mean, it's with whether or not he has just with access to lots of money. It's, what he is still a bit up in there. It's like part of him just seems like he could be... I mean, my assumption originally was that all this training, etc., meant he was a bodyguard.
That was my thought too, yeah.
But it's equally that he could be her manager or just a... he seems to have a very unhealthy devotion to her.
Yeah. And considering that in this latest episode, they established, like, Peter, who is someone that, like, no one can stay around for long. That she's so unstable and self-destructive that you can't be her friend. And yet M is very devoted to her. So, and speaking of unstable and self-destructive, I love Karen's friend. She is the best. Have you watched the latest episode? Either of you?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Just her, like, she gets lots of, she's like comes in and she's like a small little, blonde girl with a Hime cut that she puts, she uses a trench knife to make into a bun, which is so good. And she buys double grenade launchers and, she's just like weirdly yandere in a way. Like, I guess if you're going to have like a female archetype character in anime and a gun anime, it's going to be a yandere, but she, I don't know, she made me laugh all the time. And this show continues just to be good, just good.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that there's currently, as far as, well, we've been introduced to, of the characters we've been introduced to with any real depth, only one of them's male and the rest are all female.
Yeah. Well, she even her friend, who she names herself, her character after her dog, which she named because she wanted a dog and then she got a bird instead. And then she named her dog like second dog or something. And then she named her character after that dog who she apparently misses. It's just, I don't know. Her friend's super weird. But she does make it like I could get a reverse harem in this situation joke, which I think is kind of, yeah, like pillorying the fact that except for M and the, like, all Japanese machine gun gang, which is like the one rival like group they brought back from the first thing. The guys were like, we just love machine guns. We joined these tournaments to just shoot our machine guns all the time. It is interesting how woman heavy this show about an online shooting game is, because that's just like blatantly contravenes my lived experience of of most online games, let alone most online games with like a super grimdark modern gun aesthetic.
And there's no, I mean, this is something we say about a lot of anime, but it would pass the Bechdel test. With the flying colors, there's very little romantic tension or women fighting over a man or anything like that. It's just...
No, it's the main plot axis is two women trying to connect with each other, which is... I think I'd be laughed out of feminist circles for being like, this this is an anime about female relationships. Oh, you mean Sword Art Online alternative Gun Gale Online? Yes. I don't know. It's not like a feminist anime, because a lot of anime struggles with intersectionality and that sort of thing, but it is funny just how, yeah, like you said,
it's interesting how it deals with people's sort of attitudes to their own body as well. That's, I mean, it's a bit of a trope, people picking the opposite to themselves in a online game. It's like, so Len is tiny, whereas in real life she's huge, and vice versa.
And doesn't her friend like purposely make her own character ugly to avoid attention from men?
Well, yeah, she grew her hair longer and put big red gothic crosses on her cheeks because she was tired of dudes harassing her, which is kind of makes me wonder, because they were like, oh, no one can stand to be around her for long. I'm like, well, apparently people were hitting on her, but again, that's actually true to life in my experience of video games.
In that the most recent episode, people were hitting on Len's friend within like 5 minutes of her starting to play the game,
who is just as tiny as Len, with an even smaller chest. And then she like dresses up, and again, like the trench knife through the bun in the back of her hair, she wears like one of those World War One German helmets and like a flak vest, and then she's got the two grenade launchers. I don't know, like she, someone who is excited to kill people in a video game who's not like depicted to be a sociopathic person was kind of just a fun sort of laugh for me. And I'm glad that she'll be in the game to alleviate the tension.
Yeah.
And just, I don't know, her friend's funny how she like, their Karen's like solemnly like closing all the windows and like putting on pajamas to get ready for the squad battle. And then it cuts to her friend and there's just like 18 empty pint cups of ice cream. And she's like, woof, that's enough. One more bite. And then there's like a brief like plot arc about how like she like is on the shitter and can't come to squad battle. And she's like, you gotta hurry. And she's like, okay, I'm wiping now. Oops, the toilet paper tore. And it's just like, oh, wow.
I mean, as someone who for a good few years ran a WoW raiding guild, I can tell you the number of times people have missed things due to illness, family, food, no food, wrong food. Pretty much anything, and that's something which rings very true, that people just get, you just, there are certain people who just like have no idea how to pace themselves, and others who take them it sort of super seriously, and it's, I like they've got a mix of that.
Yeah, but at the other hand, like the game as depicted in Gungale Online is, as opposed to Wotakoi's video gaming, like you don't play games like that. It is literally just like a real life gun battle where everything is just reported as a video game, but it's still entertaining because it's its own world with its own rules, and those rules build good drama and even comedy sometimes. Just the fact that PKing is always possible. And so when Len's friend, I should really remember what her name is. I think her name's like Mayu or Mari or something, is like, oh, let's do some target practice, and just starts shooting grenades at Len, and she's like, no, she's good at that. I don't know, I'm enjoying this, and I'm also sad that this only gets 12 episodes, but I think 12 episodes will be perfect. So
yeah, it looks like it will have finished telling its story by the time that's done. So
I assume Pitahui, who's named after a bird that you die from poison if you touch it, which is
poisonous,
which
bird.
Is yeah. Grim dark as heck. And yeah, they'll meet, and yeah, it'll be the pop star, and she'll get those front row tickets that she promised her friend, and yeah, we'll have like a happy ending, and she'll be like, and I'll continue to discover myself on Sword Art Online, Gungale Online. Yeah. Like we were talking before the podcast, she's like, this season has just like a lot of nice shows that are nice to watch, and I'm never like, ugh, don't know if I can handle this next episode, or oh, I'm bored of the show, except for Franks, which, well, there will be a reckoning eventually. So
for somebody, yes. Either me or you.
Yeah, as you say, it's like this. I don't feel like there's any doubt about how this is going to end. Like, there's no sort of, well, I don't think it's going to end in any way which is like as grimdark as it could have been.
Like, yeah, what's going to happen? Pitahui kills herself, or Len or Karen and Pitahui don't meet? Like, those were just non-endings, really. Yeah. They're endings where nothing happens, nothing's resolved, which, as surprising as Gungale Online is, I doubt it's going to be surprising in that way.
I know you and John were both like, well, it's still aiming for this hyper-edgy audience which liked the original Sword Art, but I do think it's fundamentally, its drama is more about relationships and people than it is about the actual shooting. The shooting's just a context. It's not the content.
Yeah, but I mean, that's actually what makes it such a delight, that the shooting has really well demarcated rules, and they do a good job of explaining to you what the methods of success are. When we go into the next squad jam, and they explain the things that are different from the last squad jam, that like, one, the teams are labeled in the satellite view, so you can see whose team you're closest to and stuff, which also led on to like a really good, like the she four, the word, the Japanese word for four sounds like death. So when your Pitahui's team is called PM, so Pitohui and M, for it literally means the death of Pitohui and M. But yeah, like being like, oh, the squads are named, and also this time the satellite scan like receiver is not an immortal object, so it can be destroyed. And you're like, oh, well, now that we've been educated about like what the rules of this are, these small changes are interesting, and there's something that builds minor dramatic tension to watch for them go down. Mm. And just it makes me wonder if all of the Kino's Journey guys stuff that has like a bigger, more overarching plot is good. Because like, if you remember, my complaint about Kino's Journey was that it was just these one-off stories that never really had a through line. And so I wonder if he's just like, his layering of details and his evolution of stakes is equally good in other stuff beyond Gun Gale Online.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I hated his reboot of that so much.
It's... We never talked about it because it was a forbidden anime topic, because we just get in a fight about it. So
I think initially, I think almost John was bitter because I sort of disliked it more than he did initially, and then eventually he came around to my thinking and he was like, well, hell, I'm admitting that.
Sorry, John. No. we're bagging on you when you're not even here to defend yourself. We'll have that be a spotlight someday, and then Duncan can really, really bring out the hate.
It's so bad. So bad.
Well, I know that one of us is actually following up with a really heavy but interesting anime from the past few seasons, right, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm getting caught up in some Keyframes, a podcast about anime canon, and watching March Comes In Like a Lion. I've finished the first season.
Wow.
And it's good. So, like, unsurprisingly, it's incredible. Like, it's a shaft joint. You can see some of that DNA, especially in some of the like some of the camera tricks, some of the like methods of storytelling. And yeah, it's probably one of my favorite sports animes. It keeps everything like very grounded. Like, I don't know anything about shogi. I barely know anything about chess, but they still manage to bring the drama up to you know, kind of the same way that you guys were talking about the cooking in Golden Kamuy. It's less about the particulars of the cooking and more about what it means to the characters on screen. And, you know, bringing that forward, making you, you know, understand what they feel and feel what they feel. Yeah, and it's very well grounded. Like, the only thing that I find, like, somewhat unbelievable is just the, you know, the narrative conceit that Rei is, like, adopted like a stray puppy by this family of adorable girls who like dote on him and take care of him and help him sort of like shepherd himself through you know, an emotional recovery. And like, but then like, if they didn't have that, the show would just be about him killing himself in the third episode. So
yeah, just be a depressed dude in his apartment.
Yeah, either I would kill myself at
episode. I have that in real life, Jeff. I don't need that in my anime.
Yeah, and but like, that's like, I mean, it's like, it's the only thing in the show that really strikes me is like, that's kind of there for the story, but it's still good.
Well, I think also you're going to come into the second season where they increasingly problematize how happy this happy little family with seemingly no father or mother or grandmother, just this grandfather, like what's going on with them and why do they adopt Rei? But like, yeah, everybody in March Comes In Like a Lion has inner life and they have a good reason for doing what they're doing. Maybe not a laudable reason, but a good reason, which means that you're never disappointed to spend time with any one character. And yeah, it makes it a really rewarding watch.
I'm wondering if, do they ever do a like a focus episode on the like the scary anime dad that his sister is into?
Yes, they do too.
Okay. So, okay, yeah, because like he's like the biggest cipher of the show for me right now.
He's actually probably one of the more controversial characters because I think they ultimately give him a sympathetic portrayal, and there are some people that are like, no, he's abusive, therefore he shouldn't get his time in the spotlight as a human being with like fears and needs, to which I'm of two minds, because like, yeah, we don't want to humanize abuse, the abuser, but also shitty people have what are to them good reasons for their shitty behavior. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's, things are complex and it's not just a matter of right and wrong, although abuse is wrong 100%.
Yeah,
but I don't know, I thought it was interesting, but then I was disappointed to discover that that was a lot of people's most hated episode, because it gave him a fair shake, and they didn't feel he deserved it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, if you go against the laws of discourse, then you're gonna pay the consequences. I also really like the cats and the inner monologue. That reads is extremely accurate and true to life.
I love the cats, and they have less of a position in the second season. I think they even like change how they're drawn, right, Duncan?
Yeah, I was annoyed about that too, because they're like these. There's something about the way they draw their eyes in the first season, like they're just these scribbled, old, white ovals, and it's just this capturing of, yeah, like this, just this manicness when a cat wants something. It's just this single-mindedness.
The manic desperation of a cat.
It's like, food.
I like that they use the cat's voices to do any like onomatopoeia that's on screen. It sometimes that kind of goes against the mood, but for the most part,
yeah,
like it just kind of like adds a levity.
I think Shinbo got really, because like there is for especially after the first season of Sanrio Zetsubou Sensei, which he also directed, like voiced onomatopoeia voiced by like school children or different characters is very common, and he eventually like gets really into kind of having a soundscape that reflects the physical stuff. Like whenever Cheery talks, I think I've talked about this before, whenever Cheery, the proper one who always has to have things right, the one with the center part, talks, he develops like a system of sounds that like punctuates all of her sentences after she has this rant about how spoken language is messy because we can't hear commas and periods and exclamation points except by guessing at it. And then ever after they have like this pop, bink, pop, which are different sounds that are played when she's talking to like let you know where the periods and stuff are. And so they have this like, I think he's very interested in kind of blurring the lines between what we would think of as realistic diegetic sound and the kind of almost like storytelling, even Rakugo-esque sort of crafting the soundscape with human voices, mm-hmm. and human intention. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember, Jeff, have you ever watched Rakugo?
I haven't. It's on my list of things to catch up on.
Mm. Me too.
Oh, God damn you. I should have pitched that. Then I would have had something else.
But too bad, because I'm busy watching Space Brothers. I'm watching Space Brothers because I need to have another 99-episode anime take over my life.
God.
John really likes it, and John's not here, so I won't go into it very much. But speaking of nice anime, this is the nice anime episode. It's nice. It's two brothers.
It's knockoff Planetes.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as good as Planetes, but Planetes also is willing to go in some really dark places that I don't think that Space Brothers will ever go into, because Planetes talks about the shortness of human life and the imminence of failure in a way that two brothers who saw a UFO when they were kids decide to become astronauts. And one of them, the younger brother, becomes an astronaut right away. And the older one's kind of a fuck up and he's becoming an astronaut. I'm 9 episodes in, so I'm 1/11th done with the show. It's fine, though. It's good to watch while like drinking tea before bed or something, which is what I've been doing because I've been kind of sick. But I don't know. There's something, I don't know what it is about shows about people going into space in anime. I've watched basically every. I watched Planetes. I've watched Moonlight Mile, which is terrible. There's like a big dumb space war on the moon, and like one guy goes through a civilian space agency, and one guy goes through a secret military space agency that already has like a moon base. It's dumb. But then like Space Brothers, they all have this like kind of coziness, because I think that becoming an astronaut and going into space is a very ambitious but clearly delineated goal that kind of lets you just, you can understand the stakes perfectly because you pass a bunch of tests to become an astronaut and then you prepare a lot and then you go into space, and once you're in space you've achieved your goal and you like you've achieved something on the level of those stupid childhood dreams that very rarely get to experience a clear reckoning in adulthood. But it's just nice to watch this, and like the way that Space Brothers really tries to get its viewer excited about the possibilities of space flight and a moon base and a Mars base is just very innocent and fun, and it's kind of a good decompress. I know, Duncan, but
it's just making me think how good Planetes is compared to that, and how much.
Did you watch Space Brothers?
Yeah, I watched like the first 10 episodes. I probably actually watched more than you have.
I've watched one more than I have. So, yeah.
It's because I think for a long time, Planet Terz was the my favorite series. And I it was like, well, this might be a knockoff one, but I'll settle for that. And I don't know. It's just it lacks any... I don't know, who knows? It's 99 episodes. Maybe it does have an emotional punch by the 99th episode, but I'm not sitting through those 98 episodes to find it.
I mean, that's the thing, because John did say, and again, reported speech here, so I, you know, we'll come on next episode and we'll be like, I was wrong. Or John will be like, yeah, you're wrong. but he said that it moves to a later time slot and kind of upgrades its drama, because right now it's very silly. The older brother is just kind of a belligerent comical idiot and on the buffoon level, and the little brother is just like, if I just asked one of you guys to write a little brother character, you'd write this character where he's just like, he really loves his older brother, but he's also, you know, tries hard and ganbatte. So I don't know. it's kind of just kind of pablum right now, but it's John says that it does get more dark and intense, and I think there actually are setbacks that are beyond like, oh no, I said a dumb thing in an interview, and then they immediately cut to some guy being like, that dumb thing that the guy said in the interview was really impressive, no one else said that dumb thing, and that's how he gets ahead. So I don't know, it's fine, anime's fine. Is anyone else watching anything they want to talk about, or do you want to go to the spotlight pitches?
Watched more Legend of Galactic Heroes, and I still think it's good. I still think you'd enjoy it if you ever get around to watching a remake of
it. I already saw it, is the thing, so...
Should we... Well, things obviously have changed, and should we very quickly discuss the... or is it the character design change to one character you mentioned last time?
Oh, yeah.
Or is that a bit too difficult to discuss without a picture to contextualize?
I don't know what we can say about that, besides they made him look a lot more Jewish. So that's uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like every... So you've got a character who...
Adrian Rubinsky, the leader of, like, the amoral, independent merchant planet, yeah.
Profiteering, yeah. So they've just... Like every trope there is about how you might characterize someone as Jewish through how it's done, he looks at, and it's immediately put a bit of a bad taste in my mouth about the series, because so far it's been fairly, I wouldn't say left leaning, but like it has sympathy for more than just the glorification of war, which you could easily have.
I would say the reverse, that it's very happy to show that, like, you know, war fervor is an inherently problematic and corrosive force in society. Yeah. So
I mean, if it was just like following one side, if it was just following Reinhardt, it could easily just be this glorious empire war fever. But the fact you get a mix between both sides and two very contrasting aims in its two protagonists, like one who literally wants to become an emperor, and the other who just basically wants to get this done with as few lives lost as possible, and then go back to living a normal life.
Go back to taking lots of naps and having a drink.
To become a historian.
Yeah. Yeah, but he says his goal for a historian is like, I'm going to do as little work as humanly possible as a historian too. So he's also that like weird otaku adjacent dream. But yeah, I don't know, because the author of the original light novels clearly thinks that if everything is perfect, then enlightened despotism governing a meritocracy is the best form of government. But nothing is ever perfect, and therefore we have to put up with liberal democracy and its repeated failures to prevent the more corrosive elements of society from gaining power and weakening people's happiness and freedoms.
Mm.
So, like, I don't know. I feel like it's natural to redesign Adrian Rubinsky because his original character is the most 80s thing ever, like, stout, like, kind of, like, burly fat guy wearing a cream-colored turtleneck and a shaved bald head.
Yeah, he looked like the design had been cribbed from sort of the Marvel Kingpin.
I was thinking Lex Luthor, but sure, yeah.
Either of those, yeah. bald villain guy in a comic.
And it looks like they wanted to make you sent me the link, my first response was like, oh, he looks like they just tried to make him more like 19th century looking, like everything else. And then like, oh, but he does have kind of like wavy hair and a bigger nose, and Rubinsky is kind of Slavic / Ashkenazi Jew. I don't know. They don't have the same sensibilities about Jews and the Holocaust in Japan, because the 99.9% of Japanese people will never meet a Jewish person. So
yeah,
that's how we get stuff like Angel Cop, which is coming out from Discotheque next year.
Yeah.
Angel Cop, one of the most hateful things ever made. Oh. Yeah.
As you say, there's like a question of ignorance. But you think that in this relatively globalized society we live in now, you'd have some idea of what that was, and then it wouldn't be the best of times to incorporate that into your redesign.
Yeah. I'm more inclined to say ignorance, because I don't think most Japanese creators are that subtle about anti-Semitism, given, again, the Attack on Titan thing that we mentioned in the last episode.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
And I hated that series from the beginning, and now I feel justified. There's nothing to do with anything which I hated it for.
I deleted it off my to-watch list. I don't need to engage that cultural property. I don't need to add to that conversation, because it'll just amplify a voice that I don't think should be now. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's also has some quite good spaceship porn and starship battle porn. So it's there was a funny comment I read about it, which said that the main difference between it and the original is that now we have the technology to make 1,000 clones of one CG model instead of just drawing a load of dots on the background.
Yeah, I mean the habit in the original OVA of just having just like lines and lines of dots, and then one ship in the foreground that invariably either shoots a gun or gets blown up by a gun is, yeah, you could cut those out and it would be like cutting out the charging up sequences from Dragon Ball Z. You'd cut half the running time off of the show. But I don't know. I like hand-drawn explosions more than CG explosions. And man, you will get a lot of like billowing fire smoke drawn by some incredibly underpaid animator if you watch the original series. Well, here it's some poor peon on a computer, just explosion number 4.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break and then we'll come back with pitches. And we're back for the second half of our podcast. We will be pitching animes to spotlight in the next episode to Duncan, who by decree of me, podcast host extraordinaire, was the winner of our last spotlight contest. Jeff, would you like to go first?
Sure. Earlier this week I was chatting with John. He was talking about some of the Lupin the Third movies that have come out relatively recently, and I look back at the director's other work, and I realized that, oh, I've seen some of these before. And it also led me to discover an OVA that took place before the movie that I had seen that I had never heard of and got kind of excited about. It's about a couple of space dirtbags doing jobs and just sort of like most of the show is just them kind of like bullshitting with each other and trying to like do their job as well as they can in a hostile work environment. And it's called Trava, Fist Planet. It takes place in the Red Line universe. Then these characters actually show up as drivers in that movie. It's not extremely long. Like, its total running time, if 4 episodes, is like 45 minutes.
Hmm.
If that is too thin, because it's very stylistic. It's very like easy to watch, but it also has like it's very idiosyncratic in that same way that Redline is. But I don't think we've ever actually done much with Redline on the show also. So, you know, if we also want to tack that movie onto it, and we can just say it's the entirety of the Red Line MCU, or
the entirety of the Red Line Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, whatever, like an acronym that makes sense in that context.
Franchise, maybe even.
RLU.
And it's interesting because it's very... It's far less polished than Red Line by a huge amount. It's... It has the same aesthetic of sort of very heavily shaded stuff, but it's... Mm-hmm. I've seen it, so that's a...
A plus or a minus?
We'll see what it's competing against.
Sure. I will say we shouldn't always pick stuff that we haven't seen. Sometimes it's good to curate stuff that we've all seen and can revisit. Like with Duncan and I had the best conversation about Kaguya, I feel like, because we had seen it and we're coming back for a second go. Mm-hmm. Not to denigrate, like, John and Andy.
Quick question, Jeff. Yep. Do we know what the availability of Trava's like?
Trava, that's a very good question. I will cop to not doing a lot of legwork to see if I could find it through non-shady means.
But it's an interesting artifact. It reminds me a bit of some of the French metal Hulu. I'm completely butchering the French there. Some of the French heavy metal stuff where it's like quite weird sci-fi. So it's might be interesting in that if we can get hold of it.
And I might have fucked up. I might have picked a thing that's impossible to watch legitimately.
It's okay. I did too.
Hey. Okay. Well, let's see what the other impossible to watch thing is.
It's okay. When they finally do releases legitimately, we will be at the vanguard.
Excellent. We can pocket the episode and use it.
So I'm just going to list some things that Duncan likes, or at least has an appreciation for. Duncan, how do you feel about Rakugo?
We like it.
How do you feel about Koji Kumita, author of Sanrio Setsuma Sensei?
We like him.
How do you feel about Mizushima Stomu, director of Shirobako and Girls in Panzer and Another and a bunch of other stuff that I love?
I'm mixed on him.
How do you feel about JC Staff, the studio?
Fairly, fairly positive.
How do you feel about watching Joshiraku as our anime for next episode?
Interesting.
It is a light, funny, highly absurdist, highly pun and reference-based comedy about five women, all of whom are female Joshi Rakugo, Raku players. We actually very rarely get to see them perform Rakugo. It's mostly them sitting in the warm-up room before, after, or during a performance, talking about various things from China's theft of certain ancestral islands in Japan to the desire to follow one of their members' actions to a T because she seems to be luckier than the rest of them. It's got good attractive art. It's got a great OP and ED. It's 13 episodes of pretty good humor. I wouldn't say on Sanrio Setsuma Sensei level, but out there. And it's possible that someone could absolutely despise it and therefore give us some good drama during our discussion.
I got a question for both of you, and this your response to this will determine which one I pick. So the question is, both your series have obviously more famous works by the directors, which cover very quite similar tones. So Setsuba Sensei for yours, Ben, and Red Line for yours, Jeff. Why would you ever choose to watch your choice over that more heralded other one?
Jeff, go ahead. I need time to think, so go ahead.
I like the, like, Trava Fist Planet, like, there is action in it, but not nearly to the degree of Red Line. Its short running time means that, like, a majority of what you're seeing is just kind of, like, the interplay between the characters and their kind of, like, inner life, whereas Red Line is much more focused on the action and the spectacle. Like, there isn't as much of the spectacle in Fist Planet, which, like, you know, depending on what you're here for, you know, that might be a plus, that might be a negative. Like, sometimes, like, I will say, you know, if we do end up talking about Red Line, like, I do find that it can feel like kind of a drag at some points just because of the length. Mm-hmm. Whereas this is eminently watchable. Unless you want to buy it, then it's impossible.
Go on, Ben.
For me, it's not a difference of level of quality, it's more kind of quality. I love Sarno Setsubo Sensei. I especially love the main character, Itoshiki Nozomu's kind of stylized, comedicized depression and how that leads him to see the worst in various aspects of Japanese and world culture. However, his personality has an overriding influence on the tone and the subject matter of the show. And I think that one of the things that makes Joshiraku lighter and easier and more accessible is the fact that it has five characters, all of whom have kind of an equal presence in the narrative. And while it still does access kind of the old-fashionedness that I think that Koji Kumata enjoys in his manga, whether it's the old way that Itoshiki dresses to the kind of exaltation of the dying art of Rakugo, I think that it's just a more diverse and accessible show because of that, even if I absolutely do like Sarno Setsubo Sensei more.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's do this. I am going to go with Trevor.
Cool.
All right.
I'm doing this just because I remember it as very weird, a very, very rough gem. If gem like at all, just
like this will make more sense for North American peeps. But when MTV had that weird midnight animation show in the late 90s that had like the Max and the Head and Aeon Flux, like it kind of feels like it fits into that kind of realm of show of just like this weird thing that, like, you know, you stayed up too late at night and you're not sure if what you're seeing is actually real.
Yeah, it's for me it fits this interesting mix between old style animation, because it's there's no CG in it, it's all hand drawn and it's all solid blocks of color rather than gradients, which are so common in modern animation, but equally it is quite shabbily drawn in places and has some quite weird. I'll talk more when we do it, but it really reminds me of some French stuff. In particular, Lone Sloan is the comic book I would compare the art style to the most, but we'll get to that. It's interesting.
All right, well, so what's that? What's the name again for people? Trava Fist Planet?
No, Trava. T-R-A-V-A.
Trava Fist Planet.
Mm-hmm.
Watch that. I'm sure that if you Google it and take several common sense actions, it could be that you will stumble into a copy that is viewable. Or maybe you're listening to this in like 2038 when all anime has been licensed and you're just going to go and watch it on your holotube.
When you say that, is that a dystopian future or a utopian?
I have more confidence in us solving climate change than in all good watchable anime getting licensed. So I don't even know is the answer.
It's 2038 and all anime has been licensed.
I mean, there is a lot of moral compromise that I would make to see a full loving translation of Sarno Setsubo Sensei to on Blu-ray, but that's probably a stupid, foolish dream. But I mean, as we were talking about Space Brothers, sometimes you need stupid, foolish dreams. So
it's true.
Yes. All right. So email us keyframespodcast@gmail.com. We'll answer your question live on air. Message us on Facebook or just like us. Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter @keyframespod. And most of all, tell friends, tell family, tell a stranger on the street that you love anime and Keyframes, a podcast about anime. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.